Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on this Saturday morning. Time to go On the Money with Chris DiSimeo. He's in the studio with Mark Hogan and Ed Kurtzman from Madison Investments.
Does he or doesn't he? Will he or won't he? No, not a hair commercial. It's Ben Bernanke testifying Wednesday and Thursday. Pretty much the same testimony, though a little clarification on Thursday that reversed Wednesday's 100-point decline and turned Thursday's activities into a 200-point gain. Pretty much the same words being spoken by the same person. Interesting week on Wall Street as the earnings parade continues. And to help us digest the last week's goings-on, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show our friends from Madison Investment Advisors here in Cincinnati. Mr. Mark Hogan, with about 25 to 30 years in this business. Mark, thanks for stopping by.
Great to be here again, Chris. Thanks.
And a pleasure also to see Ed Kurtzman, Chartered Financial Analyst. Ed, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Chris.
Gentlemen, you know, markets like this where we have a pretty decent, you know, lousy January, then nice February, March. April was great until that third week, and then the May,
ugly May and June.
These kinds of markets can sometimes shake people out of their boots, out of their skin, and certainly away from their financial plan. What is the relationship between investment planning and financial planning?
Well, it's a comprehensive, at least we view it, Chris, as a comprehensive process that includes financial planning and the investments. In fact, we feel like the investments should be driven by your financial plan. And what that does, I think, is, to your point, it makes people stick to their plan in good and bad circumstances, which we've got a lot of. Obviously, we've gotten a lot of volatility lately. And that's important because if people focus on what their income needs are and their legacies, that kind of thing, and not so much on the investments, then we found that clients reach success that way.
Staying glued to the plan, and how can you do that, though? It's hard to do that, isn't it, to keep the headlines from derailing the plans?
It's hard, but life is hard, Chris.
Well, if you have to work outside this weekend, life's even harder.
Well, it takes a certain amount of discipline, and I think that's what one of the ways that we help our clients is really helping them come to grips with their future, both mm-hmm. financially and psychologically.
Yeah. You know, at your website, and there'll be a link to your firm's website from the WVXU.org website, you have some interesting pieces there, one in which you quote Alan Sloan, of course, who's been writing in Fortune for many, many years. He had some comments regarding volatility. Is volatility picking up?
Volatility is picking up, not where it was in 2008 and 2009, which were obviously elevated levels. And it's funny, in 2008, there was extreme volatility where any given day you could be up or down 2 or 3%. Which is tremendous.
Yeah, the number of days that we had those kinds of moves were becoming almost routine. And I guess Thursday's 2% move, that kind of sticks out at us now, doesn't it?
Well, there was extreme volatility in 2008. And then in 2009, there was volatility in the first quarter. And then the volatility went away because it's not volatile if it only moves in one direction. In 2009, the last three quarters were very positive. And a lot of the easy comparisons had been made in 2009 and in 2010. You know, we're just coming off of the second quarter earnings and a lot of good earnings numbers. And volatility is in there within specific names. And as you mentioned, earnings could conflict with what Chairman Bernanke is saying on any given day. And it's definitely back.
Yeah, there's an old joke that Jay Unger, who wrote the music for the Civil War, tells about the difference between a banjo and an onion. Nobody cries when you chop up a banjo. but it seems like no one complains when the volatility is heading up.
That's exactly right.
No one complains when the volatility is all on the upside.
But all the more reason, Chris, to stick to your guns, we feel, in a volatile period that we've had over the last few years. And really, if you think about it, if you sort of stuck to your guns over the last 2-3 years, the market certainly has taken a dip, but it's come back fairly strongly too. And that's kind of the point. I know that you can't our viewers can't see this on
our listeners can't see this.
Listener, I'm sorry, listeners can't see it, but
double mountain chart.
Yeah, what it shows is that 10-year rolling periods for the S&P 500 historically, and it shows, as you see at the end of that Chris, that much like the periods we had in during the Depression and in the 30s and 40s, afterwards, very strong growth in the market.
Yeah,
and it talks to reversion of the mean.
Yeah, you know, what Jeremy Siegel keeps talking about, Professor Siegel, of course, who wrote Stocks in the Long Run. He did a big piece back in March, ironically the March 9th issue of Barron's, in which he talked about how periods of underperformance, 5 and 10 year periods of underperformance and sometimes negative performance, which is what this chart shows,
right,
are usually followed by periods of outperformance to bring things back to level. At your website, you talk about that. You have a couple pieces there, your insight pieces, where you talk about how investor behavior is at the root a lot of times of underperformance, how money piled out of stocks and into bonds in the fourth quarter of 2008 and the first quarter of 2009, only to miss a rally of some significant proportions.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that when you look at fund flows, which is very telling of how investors are thinking.
Mutual fund flows. The average guy on the street.
Right.
Sort of.
At least in the United States, there have not been positive flows or money flowing into U.S. equity mutual funds since 2006. Tremendous amounts of cash have been flowing into fixed income mutual funds, and certainly you can see as a 10-year yield is below 3%, and you can see other rates such as 30-year mortgage at about 4.5%.
Yeah. The Inquirer headline yesterday about how lower interest rates are sparking a boom in refinancing, which, of course, when it's through, that could help recycle lots of money throughout the economy. And yet, you can have all this money flowing around the economy, but if people are living longer, and that's the other piece I wanted to touch on. At your website, you have a piece on investing for your life term. This is a stunning statistic. Going back to 1840, you point out, cute little baby picture, by the way. It's not either of you folks. That life expectancy, each year, life expectancies go up by 2 to 3 months a year and have been doing that since 1840. If bonds represent risk now, or certain kinds of bonds, namely government bonds, where you just have your coupon, your 2.9 for a 10-year bond, what are people to do to generate income then in the face of these life expectancies, which keep getting longer?
Well, it's definitely a common discussion we have or common question that we hear with bonds. And of course, if you look at the real yield when you look after inflation, and of course, inflation right now has not been a major issue, the real yield on cash is certainly negative, and most money markets are yielding close to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And bonds, the real yield is very small, if not negative. And then on stocks, you know, if the S&P 500's dividend is 2%, and of course you can find a lot of high-quality companies where the dividend yield is higher and they're growing that dividend and with the hope of capital appreciation, equities look like a good place to generate income, which is a little counterintuitive from what you would typically think.
Yeah, if it turns it on its head from 10, 15 years ago.
One of the reasons we favor equities right now is just in terms of relative other attractive investments.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of taxes to dividends. I mean, that could factor into some degree, but, you know, who knows?
Still up in the air. What areas of the market right now do you like for growth or income or both? What kinds of companies should investors be looking at to supplement their income with?
Well, at Madison, we take a very global approach, and it's interesting. On the equity side, we allocate assets both on the international side, but also in global buckets where if we're using a sub-advisor, a mutual fund mm-hmm. potentially, there's a flexible mandate where they can look across the globe and they can compare a domestically based company with an international company mm-hmm. and make the determination. One interesting thing on the international side is currency has been very volatile, talking about volatility. And the returns that people are receiving on the international markets vary tremendously whether that investment is made in the local currency or whether it's U.S. dollar hedged back. And in certain cases, with the U.S. dollar being very strong as of late and lots of fears in Europe. So on the international side, part of the portfolio is hedged back to the U.S. dollar, and part of it is free-floating in local currency.
Yeah. I wish we could go forever, gentlemen. It's gone by very quickly. I want to thank both of you for being here, Mr. Mark Hogan and Mr. Ed Kurzman from Madison Investment Advisors. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimio on The Money.